Shambles.
Series 2, episode 31 is where we're up to on the Carly Pilk Boys. I'm David Ferrier.
With Steve Merchant.
Zach, what's your Heat Magazine style headline for this show?
Family boat commandeered by Coast Guard. Will they ever get it back?
Find out coming up. I would not have been surprised if you went with the headline, "The Show That Should Have Got Them Fired."
Yeah. I think that was mine last week.
Oh, yeah. It's 2 weeks in a row.
It was pretty close.
I think I read a comment from the YouTube of this episode where the person said, like, this is like being in the trenches. This is not a good...
How you described it last week.
Sorry, no one can see this, but you are very awkwardly holding mic stand.
I know, it's only a little... No, people do this, right?
I don't know. I'm taking a photo of it and I'm going to put it on...
That's how... I don't know. I just couldn't get close enough to the desk. If I put it on the apex here... Here we go. There we go. We're good.
Is that okay?
Yeah, yeah.
All right, this... As you know, my office space is in a constant state of flux.
There's always new desks in here.
Oh, and a
creaky
chair.
Where are they all coming from?
I got to remember to sit on the edge of this chair, otherwise it creaks. Anyway, shambles, shambles, shambles.
Yeah, I think in the trenches would be a good way of describing it.
It takes some routes which have just aged very poorly, to say the least. And let's be very clear about this. We do not endorse... the views presented on this show. Do we need to say that, Zach?
I think you need to say it, yeah.
Yeah.
You need to lay that platform just in case it's unclear.
We'll have the conversation when we get to it. This was broadcast March 22, 2003. Number one in the UK charts. We have a new song. It's, there was a Rockbusters about this guy. Let me see if, no, I don't have it. But I have the actual clue. Let's see if you get this. You won't, but let's see. Will you leave the entrance to me garden alone? The initials GG.
No idea.
Gareth Gates. Gareth Gates. Gareth Gates.
I've never heard of that artist before. Wouldn't have made a difference to whether or not I would have got it.
He was the runner-up from the very first series of Pop Idol. The one who, remember, from Series 1, Episode 11, Carl saw he had his face on the side of a coach, and he just didn't understand that, why they went to that sort of bother.
Yeah.
You don't remember that, do you?
Nope.
Long time ago. Last season. So it's his song with... it's a team-up with the Kumars, a cover of Spirits in the Sky. Did you ever watch... why is it so loud? Did you ever watch The Kumars at number 42?
No.
Great show.
Yep.
British television show. Won an International Emmy in 2002.
Like a sitcom?
And Peabody in 2004. It ran for 7 series totaling 53 episodes and was reportedly a favourite of Queen Elizabeth II.
Oh, that's interesting.
So the conceit was... It was... a guy of like with an Indian family, and he runs a talk show. So his dream is to be a talk show host.
Yeah.
So his very loving and overbearing parents build a talk show set in their house.
Yeah.
So then he would interview real guests, but with actors playing his mum and dad and grandmother sitting next to him, who would always interfere.
Oh, that's pretty funny.
It's a fun conceit for a show.
And it's interesting to think of like Queen Elizabeth kicking back with a cup of tea and watching a bit of comedy.
With a gin in hand. Keep it down, Philip. The Kumars are on.
Well, I think that their sense of humour would be not as straight as you might think it is. Well, firstly...
Well, they're British.
They're from a very different generation.
Yeah, and they come from the country of the mighty Boosh.
Secondly, old mate. Is it Philip?
Mm.
The Duke?
Mm.
He seemed to have like a pretty out there sense of humour.
Yeah.
He made a lot of off-colour jokes through his time.
Yeah.
And so I kind of think, well, she married him. Do you know what I mean? I think that was probably there the whole time.
Mm.
And so I kind of think like, well, they probably, you know, I don't know. I don't think they're... And then you see Harry gallivanting around. I think they're less... And, you know, we know nothing about the royal family, so... people from the UK would know a lot more about this, but I think that behind closed doors, they'd be a lot less kind of down the line as they come across. What do you think?
You reckon they're putting on Rodney Rood CDs behind closed doors? I get the distinct impression that if you get a few gins into the Queen, she'd have a few things to say. Yeah, she'd speak her mind.
Well, she's seen some stuff. I mean, how long has she been in power? Like 70 years.
Yeah, yeah. Wow. First Prime Minister was Winston Churchill.
Really?
Yeah. Right at the end, or just after, because her dad died of lung cancer, mm-hmm. right around that time. Anyway, movies released the day before this show was broadcast. National Security, one of Nick Cage's greats, and Just Married, one of Ashton Kutcher and Brittany Murphy's less greats.
That's right. What an era. That was kind of in Ashton's golden period.
Yeah, he's had shaggy hair.
He's had a few kind of, he dips in and out.
What's he doing now?
I think he's like
a businessman, right? Yeah. I remember he was a heavy investor in that app. I think it's called Foursquare. Do you remember Foursquare? Yeah. Where you would go and you would check into places, and the idea was you check in there the most, so you become the mayor of that place.
Yep.
Yeah, that was a real flash in the pan.
I think they have some cash behind him.
Mm.
Ashton and Mila.
Well, she's got all that Family Guy money. She's got 17 seasons of Meg money.
It's interesting, hey, when you have those couples where it's like either one of them. It's like wealth becomes like nothing. Because it's just like, oh, you know, it's all, you get to a certain number where it doesn't matter anymore, I'd imagine.
Yeah. Because it's such a fantastical amount. You can't even fathom what
it doesn't mean anything anymore. Yeah.
A great example of that is the American football player Tom Brady.
Yeah.
He's won 6 Super Bowls. He's turning 40 and he's still playing. So he's just made so much money. He's a super, super duper mega celebrity. But his wife is Gisele Bündchen, who's made even more money than him.
What does she
do? In her modeling and business ventures. So it's just like,
yes,
you get rid of one of them, they're still if their kids lost one of their parents, they'd still have a billionaire in the family.
Is Tom Brady a billionaire on his own?
That's a good question.
Let's find out. Sports people billionaires just from sports?
Not just from sport, but LeBron James quite recently allegedly tipped over the billionaire mark, and his career earnings in basketball with the deal he just signed makes it over $500 million for career earnings. But he's been in the NBA nearly
500 million.
Yeah, and he's got production companies and all these businesses and stuff. Is Tom Brady a billionaire? This is what you come for, this kind of info on the Carly Pilk boys. No. All right, bit of business, bit of a follow-up from last week. We got into a big tangent about Super Soakers last week when we were talking about presents. That's right,
and presents because, you know, there's a theme of Carl being disappointed with his parents' presents, and I always spoke about how I was disappointed when I didn't get the Super Soaker that squirted when you yelled. It was some type of glasses, like you put them on your face and then it shot out of the glasses, and I kind of cut my parents some slack because I said, like, of course that's not how it worked. I would have just seen an ad as a 6-year-old where they were screaming while it shot out, and I would have put the two together. However, Amber has found a link on YouTube of an old ad from the 90s, and Dave, boy, was my mind blown.
This is for the Shout and Shoot 2.
Freeze!
Yeah!
Let's soak him! Yeah, get him!
No mercy!
You would shoot a guy in the back now, would ya?
Don't mess with Shout and Shoot 2.
Gotcha.
You shout, and it shoots.
Take a bath.
In any direction.
Fire.
Now this is what I call back talk. Fire!
Voice activated multi-directional Shout and Shoot 2. New from Cap Toys. Who else?
The comment on this YouTube video is, I've lost it.
But it's legit.
Sorry. No, here we go. We had a kid in the neighborhood who would just stick the microphone in his mouth and mumble screams seemed more effective than screaming fire.
I saw another comment that was like, yeah, that what a great idea, getting kids running around neighborhoods yelling fire. But also, like, you know, so it did exist. My parents could have got it, but
attention all Virgin Australia business.
Next video.
In saying that, in the 90s, how do you think that would have worked, the voice activated? Because even now, voice activated things are pretty clunky 20 years on, and we've come a long way. So I imagine it would have been pretty poor.
I love the idea, though, that you've got a thing that allows for badass, like Arnold Schwarzenegger style catchphrases before you.
That's what ads used to be like. Kids, Super Soaker ads. Oh man, and it looks like, doesn't that, you know, it's they're all shot a certain way. They're all on these sound stages that are made to look like they're outside.
Cameras tilt dramatically.
Yeah. And then that voice at the end where it's like it's kind of like a pharmacy ad where it speeds up, but it's through all the toys' features.
Yeah.
Batteries not included.
That thing though, people couldn't see, it rotates. So that's why you could get people behind you.
Yeah, that was, that's what I call back talk.
Your parents really missed a trick on that one.
I'm kind of glad though, because I don't think it would have lived up to expectations.
No chance whatsoever. You would have been like, fire! And then, you know, you cough and then it ejaculates
the kid
its water.
Meanwhile, the kid I'm fighting in the water fight has just a hose connected to the house. It's just like full tilt.
You foiled me. The one I mentioned, the giant Super Soaker, the 2000. So I found it on eBay. The things that become valuable. Vintage Super Soaker, CPS 2000. It is the one that I remember. The giant one that was like you'd pump it. You get a really sore arm because you'd have to pump it for 20 minutes.
Yeah.
But then for like 2 seconds, it was like a fire hose. US $350 is what they're asking for it. And it's got 48 people watching it. And the description says it has dust on it and was not tested. So this is just a broken piece of plastic.
Oh, yeah, that's a classic, that one. That's not the one I was thinking of.
Leave a comment below this post on the Patreon. Were Super Soakers a thing in the UK, in UK summer, running around the garden?
Surely.
Or were you just more effective and didn't overcomplicate things and just get the hose out? Hose and water bombs.
Water bombs. Have you seen them now where you can fill up 100 in? Because that used to be like you had to put a bit of prep into the fight where you had to sit there for half an hour filling up water bombs. But now they're all connected to this one thing. You just put it. Have you seen this?
Yeah.
And they fill up in, you can fill like 20 in one thing.
I tell you, water bomb technology's come a long way.
Well, now also because there's a lot of discussion about, is it a good idea to have heaps of tiny little rubber things that are now just in the garden and you never find again.
Yeah, sure.
So now there's like reusable ones, which I'm not sure how they work, but I've just seen them.
Reusable?
Yeah, I don't know how it works.
How do they burst?
I don't think they burst. I think it kind of has break points in it.
Boo.
Mad world, don't it?
We're going to be grandparents and their kids are going to have these like highly sophisticated, they'll get an arsenal with one fill and we'll be shouting at them, back in my day, we used to do it once at a time.
I remember when I had like a birthday party when I was like 10, like it was like an hour before the party started and I was in the yard filling up water bombs.
Yep.
Got to get it ready.
Got to get it prepped. And always, whatever bucket you're keeping them in, have water already in the bucket. It's a rookie mistake to just put water bombs in a dry bucket. That's how you get, you know, that's how you lose inventory.
Yep.
Let's get on to the HX Series 2, Episode 31, The Ricky Gervais Show on XFM. In break one, we start with, there's another anti-war march. This is from The Guardian. Thousands of anti-war demonstrators marched in cities around the world on Saturday, with approximately 200,000 said to have attended protests in London and New York. Slipped into my BBC impression then. So this is, really, the Iraq war is kicking off. So while you and I were running around with Super Soakers, a lot of soldiers in the Middle East were running around with real guns. In break two, we get Steve's attempt at satire coming out of the song.
Bob Dylan,
The times, they are a-changing.
The thing is, Rick, it makes me wonder if, the times, are they changing? I mean, it seems to me that life's pretty much the same as it was way back in the 60s when Bob Dylan wrote that song.
Got any idea what you're talking about?
No idea whatsoever,
You don't really know about politics,
no,
do you?
Know anything about it. Don't even read the papers. Got no interest, really.
Yeah.
Not particularly. Informed my life's cushy. Got won some awards and stuff. Doesn't bother me.
I love stuff like that. I wish they did more of it.
Yeah? What,
just bits, you know? Okay. Actual, like, clearly comedic, intentional bits like that. What do you think? First time hearing it?
Yeah, sure. I agree.
Okay, yeah.
It didn't stick out to me as, like, okay. A great moment, but yeah, cool.
Ricky worries he might need a gas mask. He's worried that things might actually get out of hand. And Carl points out that, well, he would need to worry about it because he's wealthy.
Oh, young.
Whoop. It happened with Manchester.
Oh, hang on. No, threw that to that too early. He would need to worry about it because he's wealthy. But if you live in a poorer area, getting bombed is actually doing you a favour.
It happened with Manchester with the bomb that happened, and they bombed the Arndale Centre. Did us a favour. Got a nice new Marks and Spencers and that.
So this, hold on, this puts a whole new twist to the argument when people say bombing the world's poorest countries is wrong. Because I remember when the Afghan problem was on, people were saying bombing the world's poorest country is wrong, but it's about home improvement, according to you, then.
Yeah. Because they've got a brand new B&Q, have they, over there?
The lesson is, if you know someone in a poor area, do them a favour and bomb them.
Yeah, I think there's a bit of a jump there. To a poor country versus a poor area in a rich country.
Yeah. I want to note that that's the thing that Ricky says, think of what you're saying. Compared to what's coming up. Carl refocuses the show and says that people are here for songs of phrase, cheap as chimps. Who else gets to say that? But they don't actually get to cheap as chimps.
They don't even get to the movie film, segment,
the film thing,
which is something that he's prepared.
Yeah, they get distracted by more important issues. Songs of phrase this week, the good old line, you never see an old man eating a Twix, but Carl has had to change the name of the chocolate because he couldn't find a song with Twix in it.
Why wouldn't he use tricks? That's what I was thinking.
Well, in Rockbusters, his standards are so low.
That's
about
what
the flexibility of words.
And it's funny too, Ricky absolutely goes in about how this is horrible, they're not going to play it. There's a long discussion about, you know, there's probably about 3 minutes about whether they're going to play it or not.
Yeah.
And Steve, who has a bit more of a radio mind, says, let's just let him play it.
Yeah.
Because I think he realizes we're at a junction here where we're just saying, we're going to do it. No, we're not. We're going to do it. No, we're not. And it's not very interesting. And he's like, let's just play it and react. And Ricky's very upset. Then when they play it, he gets a huge laugh. Like, Ricky loves it.
I think they play it perfectly. They play their roles perfectly. I think it's absolutely the right thing for the show for Ricky to be angry and say no. For Steve, for Carl to plead, and then for Steve to be the one who sides with Carl, and then so outnumbers Ricky and manages to get them to go to it, because like it builds it up so much that if it's going to be terrible, it'll still be funny.
As a game, it is ridiculous. What is it? Six grabs or maybe five artists?
I think it's five. Yeah,
and it's just way too hard.
Ricky says we're not going to do it, and they go to a song, and then we come out of the next song with another piece of satire from Steve.
Neil Young, beautiful. After the Gold Rush, one of the most beautiful, poignant songs ever.
Lyrics in that. Look at Mother Nature on the run in the 1970s. Forget the 1970s, Rick. I'm beginning to wonder if that's just as truthful nowadays in the year 2003.
I've told you before, you've got no idea. You don't know anything about the world or politics, so I don't know why you persist.
I don't know why I keep saying it myself, Rick. I'm a political incompetent. I don't know why I keep spouting on with this drivel.
Fun bit.
Can I also mention they play that song a lot?
Yeah.
A lot. That's at least the fourth or fifth time that they've come out of Neil Young after the Gold Rush.
On the actual playlist, it's always Feeder, Come Back Around, or whatever it's called. But Neil Young gets a lot of plays. I also think of the song Galveston. Yeah, they're their favorites. Some Radiohead, you know. That's what you get when you get to program your own music. You're not going to pick something new every week. You'll do like radio stations do now, which is just play the same stuff. Play the stuff that's
trending. I always worked on top 30 stations, so the top 30 was always changing.
I always worked on top 40, so there was 10 extra.
Yeah, there's a little bit extra. No, but you worked on kind of a similar station as XFM. When you have a back catalogue of 40 years, do they still have like only 200 songs?
Yeah. But there's the music club. There's like the VIPs that give their opinions and they
does
do,
that
they
actually
do
wrote, influence it?
They do. Oh, I don't know. Yes. Yes.
I thought it might be like a suggestion box.
Maybe.
Gets
I don't know.
Emptied once
I've
a
never
week
worked
into the
in the music department, but they do rotate songs in and out of like, because okay. Songs are classified. Not classified, like class, as in this is an A track, this is, you know, A's get played the most, B, whatever, and then there's other terminology. I'm getting all of that not 100% right. But they do chop and change. But, yeah, it's XFM is now aged into the station I used to work for because Gen X's are now who they're targeting. And XFM 20 years ago was the youth.
Well, it's funny, they're probably playing the exact same music.
Yeah,
they'd be playing like that early 2000s.
There's a bit of
rock.
Crossover. They here at this point, it seems, I get the impression from just how Steve particularly talks about him, that Bruce Springsteen must have been a bit out of fashion at this time in history. Because they thought he was just I think he says people call him a ludicrous stadium rocker. But, I mean, the boss... He's an integral. He's right up there with In Excess and Cold Chisel.
But Steve went to a lot of effort to get tickets. So he obviously doesn't.
I just don't think he was like seen as cool in the age of nu metal, in the age of Limp Bizkit.
I remember in year eight, this year. It would have been, is this 2003?
2003, yeah.
Yeah, I was in year eight, first year of high school, and I was doing music. And I said to the music teacher, hey, I'm going to a concert tonight, Bob Dylan. Have you ever heard of him? And the music teacher was like, yeah, I've heard of Bob Dylan.
he didn't slap you across the face.
Fell asleep in that concert. My dad took me, and it was like the latest I'd ever stayed up. He wouldn't have come on till like, I don't know, 9 or something. It was on a weeknight. I fell asleep.
And he was, I don't know if he still is notorious for not giving the audience what it wants. He'll do reimagined versions of his songs. And he sounds completely different.
You have to listen to the lyrics and try to figure it out. That's the game. Yeah. And people whisper to each other, oh, it's all along the watchtower.
Yeah, great.
But it's like, well, it doesn't sound like it.
they do
Which,
eventually.
From an artist's point of view, by the way, cool. Like the idea that you're like, I'm not going to play it the same way. I'll do what I want. From an audience point of view, can you just play it how you recorded it, please?
I remember a music festival where a criticism from someone in my orbit was like, oh, I hated it. It sounded just like the CD. It's like, don't you like the music that's on the CD?
Sing it out of tune, guys.
Yeah, guys, come on.
Have some balls.
Have a nice, you know, big riff in the middle. Go off book.
Oh, I saw Neil Young also, and he would do like 10-minute riffs. Like he'd be playing guitar, he'd be up on the speaker. Again, I think I might have fallen asleep in that as well. My dad took me to a lot of these like shows when I was like, you know, in these kind of formative years, and I just couldn't stay up that late.
I'm not a musician, so I don't know, but that sounds like the artistic equivalent to just masturbating in front of a bunch of people. Like, I'm really enjoying this. I don't care if you
are. The crowd seemed to enjoy it. Okay. Yeah. Neil Young was really good. You know, Bob Dylan's a thing as well, but I wouldn't describe it as like overly enjoyable. Like you're like, yeah, okay, it's an experience.
This is one of my least popular opinions. I don't find live music terribly exciting.
Ah, okay, interesting.
I think just because I'm so not a musician, here's what I say, and I know it's not, you know, fair and accurate, but I would never just stand there and listen to music. In any context.
Yeah, true.
I would never sit and listen to an album from start to finish and not do something else.
So would you enjoy it more if you had some like if you brought some taxes and just had it on in the background?
If I could do a call with my accountant and really get, if I could sort out the BASS, my latest BASS statement while Neil Young is up there doing a 10-minute solo, then sure. Yeah.
There's certainly some boring bits in every show.
But also I got a bad back. I got a bad lower back. Like I cannot stand there and just go woo, because I don't know, I don't understand. It's lost on me the craftsmanship of the musicianship. I'm looking at it going like, I know that's really impressive and hard, but like, God, I wish I was doing my taxes right now.
Well, my wife grew up being heavily involved in music, so you know, she understands it all. She did like all the music theory, she knows if things are in tune or not. But like, so we have very different experiences, because I always come away from the shows being like, that was good, no matter what. I'm like, man, they were good. She's like, really? Like, that was out of key or that was off tune or whatever. And I'm like,
that's like
lost on me.
Brooke with musical theater, we come out of every show, I'm like, that was great, they had awesome voices. She's like,
no, they didn't.
No. So they finally get Carl is finally allowed to play Songs of Phrase. Here it is.
I missed a little bit at the end.
It has like the rhythm of a joke, I think. That one in particular,
the bar, bar, bar,
with the sustain, funny. And then the revert, like, you know, the surprise of bar, 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 bar. It is very funny. It's one of Carl's best, one of Carl's worst, which makes it his best.
Also, just the idea that it's already like, it's already a stretch to be like, oh, these are phrases from the show. So if you've never heard the show before, you're gonna have no idea. And then they're like, and instead of Twix, it's gonna be Mars. There's a few jumps.
So many layers added. So then we get into break five, which is the point where the show starts to turn sour for a number of reasons, starting with Carl's disappointment about watching the 1932 movie Freaks, because it was built up too much, he says. He says, the woman who eats with her feet, if she wasn't hungry, she'd look normal. That's not good enough for Carl.
Well, they get into a legitimate fight. Spawn out of this conversation where
between Rick, Carl, and Steve.
Yeah,
yeah. Well, we'll get to that. I'll just explain, because I'm assuming I haven't seen it. Have you seen the movie?
No,
no. The plot is, when trapeze artist Cleopatra learns that circus little person Hans has an inheritance, she marries the lovesick diminutive performer, all the while planning to steal his fortune and run off with her lover, strongman Hercules.
Oh wait, hang on. This is a scripted thing.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
so it's
like
a movie. I thought it was like a documentary.
No. Scripted, like, which for it's 1932. Yeah. I think part of the controversy at the time would now be considered it's like progressive things that should be applauded, which is it had a cast of people who, circus performers, that very, you know, which was very out of the ordinary. And it, and the from what I gather, the part of the message is like, well, you call these people freaks, but who are the real freaks?
Oh, okay.
Because the trapeze artist Cleopatra has sinister intent. When Hans' friends and fellow performers discover what is going on, they band together and carry out a brutal revenge that leaves Hercules and Cleopatra knowing what it means to be a freak. Anyway, critics' consensus on Rotten Tomatoes: time has been kind to this horror legend. Freaks manages to frighten, shock, and even touch viewers in ways that contemporary viewers missed.
Oh.
But yeah, Carl wasn't impressed. And I think
you didn't seem to be getting that message from it.
No. I'm curious to watch it. And it's one of those movies that has a bit of an infamous history, because the original, because it caused so much controversy and the studio edited it so much, and the original version is apparently lost to time. So what we were getting to, you were saying before, is that in Carl's review, he turns his focus to Steve and things get nasty.
You know, I'm not being funny.
Oh, here we go.
No, but I'm just saying, if that woman wasn't eating and you were sat next to her in that film,
yeah,
I'd probably be sort of drawn to you more than her. I'm not. I know you hate me saying it, but there's no point sort of pretending. Do you know what I mean?
Oi, Muttley, what are you sniggering about?
Oi, Muttley. is this where he goes on to go, also he goes, he seems more upset at Ricky, Steve, and he goes, don't think I didn't see you in the ads, whispering to him things
so
to say.
So that's next. Yeah, Ricky's been a real Loki in this situation, just creating mischief, pitting them against one another, egging Carl on.
But you can hear at this point it's still just boiling. But yeah. It gets to a point where it's like, oh, this is a legitimate fight.
Well, and that comes up next. So Steve goes pretty quiet for the rest of this. Then in break six, so I just want us to all enjoy a minute of Carl trying to justify himself. He's not picking up on how unamused Steve is, but he won't let it go, and he just keeps digging a hole.
Yeah. And I'm not being out of order, Steve. I'm just being honest. We've always said that about this show. Yeah, we only talk about stuff, you know.
Yeah.
Have they?
That, yeah. You know, being honest and that.
Yeah, no, sure.
And I've always said the first time I saw you.
Sure, no, you've always been honest. And I've always been honest with you. I've always said that, you know, you've got the intelligence and insight of a gnat.
Yeah, but if I keep quiet, people don't know that.
Shot him.
All right, incredibly they do, Carl, because you look stupid as well.
Well, you know,
yeah.
No, but Carl was being nice then. You don't.
I'm just saying, you're a good bloke, and now I've got to know you.
Sure.
The first time was weird when I saw you. I'm just saying the first time it was weird and that, and then weeks go by.
Sure.
And the weird thing is, I kind of thought maybe he's not that odd looking.
Yeah.
And then you went to LA for 3 weeks.
Sure.
And when you came back, it was like the first time again.
Stop it now. Stop it now.
I just think I'm a little bit more consistent because I've always thought you're an idiot.
I don't want this. Don't argue. It was just okay.
No, I just you know what I mean. My opinion has never changed. I've always thought you're an idiot.
No.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Well, they go from barbs to just you can tell that the kind of it's. You know, it's boiling away and they're trying to do clever roasts. And then it just gets to insults.
Yeah.
Like, it just gets to, like, you're an imbecile.
Yeah.
And that's what happens when you play with fire. Like, and that's what I think Ricky is kind of doing, is he's pitting them against each other for his own amusement. And but then it gets to a point where he's like, oh, no, okay.
Telling that he ends up shouting, I didn't want this.
Yeah. Well, what did you want?
Because
what did you think was going to happen? But that happens. That back and forth where it's kind of playful, then it's a little serious, then it's like, oh, no, it's now actually someone's upset. That happens in radio studios sometimes, or just like creative relationships.
Or that thing, you know, with kids,
actually.
You play fight and then...
Yeah, and then someone gets bumped on the nose.
And then sees red and... This was the radio equivalent of that.
Have you been in radio teams where it's balled over like this, or have you heard radio
yes,
before?
Yes, I have. Yeah, but it hasn't started out as playful digs.
No, it started like that?
No, it just started as like, oh, I'm going to tell you what I really think. And then,
On air?
No, actually, no, in a post-show meeting.
Wow.
Yeah. The thought that they'd kept to themselves, like, I'm finally going to tell you what I think.
And is this like with the broader team, or is it this just the people in the studio?
It was in a full team. Two people.
And so you've got promo people there.
Sorry, just the breakfast team. So producers and content director, and we're just going. Ugh.
And was it awkward?
Yeah, terrible. It was awful.
As soon as we turn off the mics, I want to know who that was. I've heard ones on air, like as a listener, where I'm like, ooh. And I'm like, maybe people don't realize that was real, but that was real.
Mm. I think from a comedy, from a listener perspective, I enjoy a lot of that, not considering, you know, Steve's feelings or whatever, but just because of the run that where they are getting the roasts in. like, well, I've always thought you look stupid. Yeah, but if I keep quiet, no one can tell. Like, that's a great line to just come up with off the top of his head.
He's actually hard to go against because he stayed really calm. Carl, that was the difference.
Mm.
Whereas Steve started to get elevated, which I understand. His feelings were hurt.
Yeah, yeah.
But Carl, you can hear the security in that retort where he goes, yeah, but if I keep quiet, no one will know.
Yeah.
It's just very...
He's not feeling that hotness in the front of his face.
There's no elevation.
Yeah.
And you can't go against a person like that.
Yeah, that's...
like,
that's
you've got to lose.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. He can't... If someone keeps their, like, their emotions under control, Carl, like, you know, he's on record. He's notorious for just like, well, I say what I think.
And I don't think he cares legitimately whether or not that's...
he's capable of.
Yeah.
Like, unless it's the elephant man, he's...
Like, he doesn't seem to, even when they say that his ideas are no good, actually, occasionally he has got worked up.
He does
over
arc
a few
up
things,
a little bit. And he does later then apologize because he just didn't realize that it was genuinely affecting Steve. I mean, how could he have known?
Does he apologize in the episode?
Yeah. He goes, oh, well, I'm sorry. Oh. You know, it's not a
great apology.
Oh, I've realized the error of my ways. It's like, oh, it's more of a, I'm sorry if you were offended by that. Yeah. It reminded me a little bit, we've been watching Hello Ladies. In the last episode, remember Stuart, Steve Merchant's character, tells a gay joke in the spa. It's offensive. Everyone gets offended. But then he won't let go of trying to explain to everyone, no, you just don't, like, it's okay. He just won't let it go. He won't accept their...
Yeah, there's no acceptance of responsibility.
Yeah, of responsibility. That's it. That's what it feels like Carl does. It's like, no. Look, hey, no, this isn't something you should be offended by. I'm just stating a fact. And that should be fine.
That's just a classic apology misstep. It's like whenever it's I'm sorry and then if follows.
Yeah.
It's like that's not
very sorry. If
yeah.
You found it offensive that I said you wouldn't look out of place in a movie called Freaks. So they reflect a bit more on the movie and then the chat moves on to the NHS, which is when Ricky puts the hypothetical choice to Carl choosing which, if he had $5,000, which surgery would he cover? The woman who wants a cat's kidney replaced or a trans woman wanting reassignment surgery? And this is where things get ugly. And then in break seven, it flows on into the next break seven. And Zach, the conceit of this show is that we're air checking the Ricky Gervais show, and it's your first time hearing it, and we're listening to it from a radio perspective. Now, obviously, this was 20 years ago, but if break seven of this show went to air in 2022, it would be leave your passes.
Yeah, well, it'd be a code breach.
Yeah, you know, there's at reception. Like, see you later.
Opinions or language that a reasonable person would find offensive. Yeah, that's
community standards.
Yeah, breached community standards. The show's off.
Yeah.
Or at least probably Carl is. I don't know about the others.
Yeah. Yeah. And this has been something that, like, off air, because this is your first time listening through, do you want to talk about this? Like the idea of
some uncomfortable listening.
Anxiety. Yeah, some uncomfortable listening in moments like this and some anxiety of being like, well, look, it's one thing to be like, well, this is them just talking 20 years ago. It's another thing for us to be putting a spotlight on it or whatever in the time that we're in. And particularly coming from me who I say that I am this show means a lot to me. As a whole, but you know, I think of Carl sort of like as a family member who I love a lot about them. Sometimes they've said things that I cringe at, and I, you know, don't endorse. But as a whole, you know,
well, I don't love the person. I don't. Yeah, but listening to it, it's uncomfortable and distasteful and offensive. I am thankful that I don't hear that on the radio anymore. And I see that as an indication that we're moving in the right direction. Yesterday, I was, one of these articles kind of came up like, you know, ads from the past. that wouldn't fly today, and there was all these sexist ads from the 60s, and I was amazed at how, and, you know, disgusted by how sexist they were, and I was really happy that, you know, my kid isn't going to grow up seeing ads like that. And I thought, well, you know, I hope, you know, we've come a long way since there. We've come a long way since these opinions were on the radio. I hope it's like an indication. The fact that it's uncomfortable to listen to now, I think, is an indication that we are moving away from that in the right direction.
Mm. True.
And I think, you know, sometimes these things, you know, it's a reminder of that sometimes. It's like, oh, wow, yeah. And we still have a long way to go. But do you get what I mean? Like, you hear this and you go, oh, jeez, that was only 20 years ago and that was allowed to be put on the radio? And people, maybe people did complain. I imagine people did complain, but they didn't. There was no consequence for that.
I'm like, well, it's also like there's social media now. It's like complaints aren't one-to-one. Yeah, it's not a direct phone call. It's for public consumption.
Well, it seemed like there was a lot more. It was a lot more because they did have complaints over tit and cock.
Yeah.
In reference to the birds. And they went through an official complaint process. Yeah, it seems like swearing or like vulgar words seem to be offensive, but maybe not opinions on.
Well, I don't know. They allude every now and then that Carl has to. He says, like, you don't see what I have to deal with during the week because of things that happen on this show.
But it's like, but, you're saying on Carl. What do you mean?
But it is like now, if you complain on Twitter or something, and then you alert to certain people in your circle, that then it can compound. You know, like it can then the incident can reach a lot more people to get a lot more.
But this
angry.
Could still be a problem, though, even without social media, because it is a codes breach.
Absolutely. But what I'm saying is, like, they before social media, things that were worthy of complaints and got complained about, it took a lot more for it to reach the public conscience.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. There was because you had to do a written complaint. That was a thing too. Yeah. Like, it had to be. I guess because it indicated some commitment by the listener. I don't really know why it had to be written, or maybe because it was a paper
trail
there.
It still has to be. If you want to formally complain, you have to submit it in writing.
Is it just so there's a record, maybe?
I don't know. Maybe it is just that, like, well, if you're serious about this, get a stamp. But then from that to get, like, to a broader public conscience, it wouldn't have to be enough and loud enough to get onto, like, TV or something. Yeah. Or
the paper.
The paper. Those barriers have been brought sort of down a little bit. It also makes me think, like, it is, and it makes me think, like, a Carl Pilkington today, as in this version of Carl Pilkington, the one who is, how funny is it, how stupid he is, I suspect, like, you just couldn't get that, someone like him, on, like, a free-to-air, you know, live radio, because for every... they say the ice caps are melting, why not just chip a big bit up? You know, when he said, like, oh, you put an ice cube in your Jack Daniels, it makes it cold. They're saying, you know, the things, why not just chip a bit off the iceberg and put it in the water? It will freeze it up again. You know, for everything, like, ha, 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 that's so silly, you so don't get it. Like, he can stray into dangerous territory,
yes,
like he does here, and say some very ignorant things.
Yeah, it is ignorant. And I hope and think and believe that he doesn't hold the same opinions today.
No. Ricky, on the other hand?
We don't know.
Watch his latest special. still believes it's good fodder for comedy. Okay, break eight. They get back onto more reliable territory because they get onto the topic of things you can do over the age of 40.
Things that you can sort of say and do when you're sort of like 40. I thought another one, nod to a policeman.
Yep, definitely.
They're on the beat, they're going along, you're going, you're doing, you're going on, yeah, I know you're all right. I know you're all right.
Yeah.
Never mind these youngsters shouting at you and knocking your cap off.
Exactly.
It's that you can nod at
if
a copper.
If you're 40, you can nod at a copper because it's like going, I know what you're up to, it's a difficult job, you're doing it well.
Yeah. I respect you now. I didn't when exactly. I was young, I don't know what I was thinking of. Well done, mate.
Good phoner.
It is. It's a good segment. It's a good segment. And it's still relatable today. Mm. See, that's one that has. It's still true today. I feel like that. Do you feel like that? The idea of backing in a...
Yeah, truck driver. Come on.
Keep it coming.
Yeah.
There are certain things, the coming of age things that, you think of coming of age as like from teenager to adulthood, but it continues into your 40s. There's things that you can do now that you couldn't do. And I guess as you get older and you get into like grandparent age, I'm sure there's things grandparents can do that younger people don't.
Yeah. I don't know if I'll ever be old enough to be comfortable to offer any sort of assistance to anyone in any sort of trade, anyone who actually works for a living. And it's not because of age, it's just because of my delicate hands. You know, I'm a creative.
Well, the same thing with I thought when Steve spoke about, I felt like, oh man, I haven't been in that exact situation, but I know that feeling when he said, if I'm having a beer with my dad and his friends, no one's going to ask me if it tastes a bit sour, a bit
off.
I'm like, like you do revert to being a child, no matter how old you are, when you're with that kind of older generation.
I've said to Brooke, like, at what point will we start paying for dinner with our parents? As that, and I thought, well, once kids are in the equation, and we're going out, and they're coming with us, I don't know, but you've got kids. Does that happen yet? Have we had this conversation?
We've had this conversation. I don't know if we've had it on air. I've spoken to you about this, because that's not. It's not to a situation where that would happen with my dad.
Still got some years.
Yeah, he's like upset by it. He's like, don't be silly, mate. It's like
don't challenge me.
Yeah, I'm like, oh, well, I'm not. You know.
That is the equivalent of like, two silverbacks having a... Yeah, it's like, no, this is how I demonstrate I'm the alpha. I pay. So, yeah, good phoner. The second half of this show, I think they do get onto more. There were some things I heard that were like, these are like good... These are the kinds of radio segments I've heard all over the place. One being good phoner idea, things you can do over certain ages. But, of course, they wouldn't involve callers. It's not that kind of show, which I love. Steve has a photo of his grandfather at the beach wearing a suit.
This is interesting too. I related to this because my wife's grandfather was a little the same. And he was also a builder. So he wasn't from like kind of, he was a working class guy. Yeah, always wore a suit or wore a suit a lot. But he also used to say...
In retirement?
Yeah.
Or just...
Yeah, just around the place. And he would say... It's interesting. He would say jeans were for farmers, like blue jeans. Like, he's like, I'm not wearing that. I'm not a farmer. But I'm like, also, what's the distinction? Like, you're a builder. Is that, like, they're both, is farmer and builder different classes? I was like, they're both, using your hands.
And do builders look down on farmers?
That's what I'm wondering. And also, like, did you not wear jeans? What were you wearing when you were building? Like, I was like,
a suit.
Yeah,
a full three-piece suit.
I guess in the hot climates you're probably wearing shorts, but yeah, there was a few things where I was like, I had never associated jeans with like farming.
Slight tab opening tangent, but just talking about grandparents and stuff, I was just in Bundaberg with Brooke, and we went over to her grandparents' place looking at photos on the wall, and there was one photo I went, your grandfather's eyes look a bit strange in this one. And apparently, before Photoshop, you got an official portrait done and someone had their eyes closed, they would paint the eyes on. And it was such an uncanny valley thing to look at, because if you glance, you're like, yeah, sure. But then if you looked a little closer... There were just these beaming little painted eyes.
And can you imagine the interview when they were talking to the photographer? And they're like, we're using the latest technology of eye paint. It's like, you won't be able to tell the difference.
You will not be. And it would have been, you know, pre-digital, so they wouldn't have been able to check their work.
What
before
year
they...
do you think it was? 80s?
Early 90s, I'd say.
Early 90s?
Mm.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well,
the internet was only invented in 94.
Were there a lot of people in the photo?
No. It was like a husband wife.
And what, they couldn't find one where they both had their eyes open?
I don't know. Apparently. So then they talk about old names given to kids, things like Alf and Sid, which led to the story of Carl's.
Oh, by the way, I know an Alf and a Sid baby.
Yeah, it's come back around, right? Yeah.
I understand the sentiment, but I guess there's just new names that we would substitute into that.
Yeah.
Gary. Keith is one that's thrown around a lot.
Craig.
Craig.
There are many Craigs. Baby Craigs.
But it's just, they just cycle. You think of them now because they're old names, and then they're thought of as kids' names.
Yeah, but there is a bit of an element of like, oh, it's cute because it was formerly an old person's
yes.
name.
Yes,
yeah. That's a radio segment that we used to do, and I've heard elsewhere, is young man with an old man's name. And young woman with an old woman's name.
Like, that's funny.
Like we're looking for the youngest Bert.
My niece is Sylvie, which I think some people would say was an older person name.
Is that like a for Sylvia? Like is that a nickname? No,
Sylvie. Just Sylvie and Lucille is her sister, which again is some people would say that's an old person name.
Lucille Ball. So the story about Carl's uncle Alf, not his real uncle. Did you have any of those? I feel like I missed out. I had no fake uncles.
Kojak. Which actually isn't even his name. Which I think is a reference to the TV show, isn't it?
Yeah, I know there's a character.
Is there a detective TV show Kojak? Anyway, we had Uncle Kojak and he had one finger. It was remarkably similar to what happens in Arrested Development where they use the guy with no arm to teach him life lessons. He didn't quite do that.
No, that's a detective.
But every time he came over, he did give us a different story of how he lost his finger.
Uh-huh.
And you'd hold it up and you'd go, you know how I lost this? And it would always be a different story.
That's fun.
Yeah, he's fun.
That's fun, fake uncle gear. So he had one finger or he was missing one finger?
He was missing one finger, sorry. I don't know the true story to this day. I should ask my dad. But they were like... You know,
I'm sure it's unremarkable. That's why I came up with things.
Is there an unremarkable way to lose your finger?
Oh, lawnmower.
It's all pretty... That's remarkable.
Is it?
Yes.
Sticking your hand out a window during a drive and it gets caught in a tree or something.
These are all remarkable.
That was always... Did you get this? Like school buses that had windows that opened. That was how teachers kept you from sticking your head out there. Was like, oh, I knew a kid who stuck his head out and the hair got caught in a tree and ripped his scalp off.
No, or not that one, but you know, they knew a kid that fell back on their chair and hit their head.
Fell back on their chair.
The one that scared me was an older teacher that was close to retirement told me that they knew a kid who got hit behind the ear with a cricket ball and died. And that just scared the crap out of me.
Well, that happened in a professional.
That happened in a professional context.
Yeah, so she wasn't... and you were a cricket player as well. Yes. If a teacher told me that, I was like, all right, cool, I don't play cricket.
Yeah, true. But
I'm going to have a nice lean on my
back then. Also, like, even kids didn't wear helmets. Now, like, everyone wears helmets. I've heard from I talked to my cousin recently and his kid's playing and he's like, anyone within 10 meters of the bat has to wear a helmet, which is a good idea. But when we were kids, they would, like, encourage you to bowl bounces. And, like, no one's wearing helmets.
Go for his head.
It was outrageous.
So Uncle Alf. Not a real uncle of Carl's, but this is what he used to do.
And he used to sleep in a dinghy. Right, Uncle Alf.
What, in his house?
Yeah.
Yeah, I had to listen to this twice because at the start I just thought he was in a houseboat or a very small houseboat. And then I was like, hang on, is the boat inside his house?
Yeah, little rubber dinghy. But that wasn't all. This is also how he enjoyed television.
And he had two tellies. Right, he had two tellies, one that the sound worked on, the other one only the vision worked. So if you wanted to watch a programme,
you had to turn both on.
Put them both on like BBC One, turned one up and watched the other one.
I love it. That sounds like I can relate to that, like finding a solution and just sticking with it forever.
We can cross that off the illustrious Carl's childhood. That one now makes sense. The only thing I got wrong listening to this episode was that he used to wear a suit. I should have put him in a suit. Anyway, small detail.
It reminded me, I sometimes watch the football like that. I'll listen to the audio on my phone and the visions on the TV so that like I don't disturb the rest of the house.
Isn't it out of sync though?
A little bit. No, but you can pause. I'll listen to the radio, right? And you can like pause it and start it again. So it's in sync.
That's smart. Smart. Carl says he didn't think anything of it as a kid, which is what happens. It's just normal to you, so you don't think of it. Another good phoner. Things you thought were normal as a kid.
Carl would have so many.
Yeah.
My goodness. And also I imagine because it's exaggerated because he moved to the big city. So he'd get to London and he'd be like, hang on, not everyone.
What, beds?
Not everyone has a dinghy. It's like, where's the horse in the house? There are a lot of outside things inside in his upbringing. Horses, dinghies.
But then also inside activities that are happening outside. Like he wasn't allowed in to play Hungry Horace with his friend. He had to play through the window. Break 9. Ricky and Steve don't like money being spent on rescuing posh mountain climbers. And then they move on to the story of Steve's seafaring adventures when he was a kid, which went wrong when the engine conked out. And they had to row against the current. A ferry approached, their saviour, but then Steve's dad said this.
We were going, brilliant, brilliant, they can help us, they'll throw us a rope, they'll tow us back in. He was going, you've got to be careful though, hang on, because according to the laws of the sea, if he rescues us, Steve, he can claim my boat. The laws of the sea mean he can claim my boat as salvage.
I love the idea of
that's like a reward. That's
doing that, the laws of the sea!
What I like is, his 12-year-old son might die, he's thinking about the boat.
I know, but also, the other thing, of course, is that I like the idea of this ferry master going, arr.
Yeah.
The boat be mine now, or take your son.
Yeah.
Any sentence that starts with, according to the laws of the sea, is gonna end well.
According to the laws of the sea.
And you're like, yes. Where's this going?
He's confusing it with the law of salvage.
Yeah.
Not the law of rescuing people. So I looked this up. The international law of the sea imposes a duty on all vessels to render assistance to any person found at sea in danger of being lost. While there is no comparable obligation to try and to salve a vessel in distress, it has been a fundamental principle of maritime law for over how many years, Zach?
600.
3,000 years to render a volunteer who successfully rescues another person, ship, or cargo. The traditional concept of salvage involved the rescue of property from wrecked ships, including flotsam, jetsam, and laggin. Don't know what those words mean. Alongside the development of a commercial salvage industry, during the 20th century, the modern law of salvage has undergone significant refinement and is now enshrined in the International Convention on Salvage. Sorry, I didn't pre-read that. Not a lot of that made sense.
I've witnessed something similar. We were surfing at Double Island Point. You know, it's kind of a remote. It's not really remote, but it's hard to get to because you have to drive up the beach 80 kilometres. Part of kind of southeastern Queensland.
That's yeah, I don't know. I don't know if enough people can't get this from you. You historically throughout your adolescence put yourself at in very dangerous surfing positions.
Nothing dangerous about this.
80 kilometers.
It's remote, I guess. Well, but not to a helicopter. Not to a helicopter.
Sure. Which is going to know that you're in distress? How?
Oh, someone would call them.
Okay, so you at least went alone.
No. We're with a group. And there's other people around. There's like four-wheel drives everywhere. Like it's populated.
I retract my statement.
It's remote in the sense that it's hard to get to. But like you're not surfing by yourself. It is a particularly sharky area to surf. Like
okay, it just feels, I reinstate my
sharky
statement.
Is a description, an adjective that people use of like not necessarily sharks, but feels like the sharks.
Yeah.
But there also were sharks here.
Okay, good. Thanks for clearing that up.
Side point, we were surfing once and there was all these tourists on the same place up on the headland and they were yelling and screaming and pointing and we thought they were waving. They were all like waving to them. And then when we got in, they're like, no, we were saying shark. Uh-huh. There was we could see a shark because we're up high. We can see the water. And we're like, oh, well, didn't get us.
Oh, well.
But around the headland, right, this is quite a remote headland, there was quite a nice boat, like a yacht, up on the rocks like it had been... It was like shipwrecked or I don't know, whatever you'd call it. And there's like jet ski circling offshore. There was a helicopter that came. A helicopter landed and these people ran out. And we're all talking about what would happen. There's two big dogs, huge dogs, like kind of chained there too. And people were like, oh, they've put those dogs there to stop people stealing all the stuff on the boat. And apparently the jet skis were like scoping it out because they were trying to... There's like professional people that like steal stuff or salvage. I don't know if it's legal. And then the story that I was told was that these people who came on a helicopter were like the owners and they were like returning to the boat to like protect it, I guess. I don't know. It's pretty crazy.
Wow.
None of that could have been true because I was 15 and there was like other people were like filling in the different points. But what I do know was that there was a very expensive boat washed up. There were dogs, there were jet skis. someone came on a helicopter. Put together what you will.
But to put dogs there instead of, like, I don't know, some sort of remote community...
just someone.
Security camera or just a person. Yeah, just a person.
I don't know how long the dogs had been there. Maybe they were just left there for the morning. I don't know.
Maybe they were the owners.
To be completely honest, do I remember seeing dogs? I don't know. That might have just been a part of the story I was told.
This whole story might have been a fever dream of Zach's.
But we were surfing and, like, off the headland, and there was, like, jet skis going past and stuff. Now, we should go surfing there. It's a really good spot.
Okay. So you have to drive along a beach for 80 kilometres?
No, it can't be 80 kilometres.
You have to drive along a beach.
It's like an hour or an hour and a half. But if you're on the beach, it wouldn't be 80 kilometres. I don't know.
I don't think my Subaru can handle the beach.
It's quite a long way, yeah.
I don't think your Mazda 2 could handle it either. No, we need to...
The issue is the crossing. So, like, you come when you go over the soft sand. So once you get on hard sand, you're fine.
Really?
It's hard. Where you get in trouble is, like, the soft sand, which you have to cross to get off the beach or on the beach. That's where you get bogged. And we were in, like, this all-wheel drive that was not suitable for the beach. And so it was like a bobsled team. We were, like, all in the back.
Oh, that's cool.
And then the guy driving would always be like, all right, everyone out. And we'd jump out and push and then jump back in. And it was not appropriate.
That is a little thing since moving to Queensland. There's a lot of great, like, sand islands and stuff. But I have been like, well, don't you need, like, the most fully equipped hardcore four-wheel drive? So it's interesting for me to hear that you can test your limits if you've got the enough personnel.
You know, going up the coast where we go surfing and you cross through all those, there's those plantations of wood, wooded land. Oh, with a similar Subaru to you, when I was 18, I had friends who would turn off the highway, just like not on a road, just turn off the highway into those bushlands. And we would just go on the way to the beach. We'd spend half an hour going through the,
just tearing.
Just like fanging it through the bush. And you could feel like roots through the floor, like hitting your feet. It was like not a good idea because, like, if your car went down there, it's like that would be difficult to get it out.
Yeah, I'm trying to retain a bit of value. That is a real 18-year-old, like, I don't care about resale.
Yeah, well, where'd you go to also? Like, we'd cross, like, through, like, there was, like, puddles. And I remember once, it was, like, the water was, like, getting up to the window. And I'm like, oh, dude, I think we're too deep. Like, and because we're up on an angle and I'm on the low angle. Like, so two wheels are out of the water.
So you can see your death.
Yeah, I can see. Oh, it's just a puddle. I guess if it rolled, you'd be in trouble.
Yeah.
That car lasted two trips.
Okay.
He bought this old Subaru. It lasted two trips. We did that twice and then it broke and we never saw it again.
Okay, that's some perspective for everyone out there thinking of hitting the beach in a little two-wheel drive. Well, all-wheel drive, yeah, I don't know the difference. So we then get on to the fact that Carl thinks he doesn't need Einstein. He says, everyone has one good idea. Newton has had the apple. I did Rockbusters.
I'm glad that he's putting those as same comparable.
Carl doesn't rate, you know, E equals MC squared, but he thinks the cat feet mops is a brilliant idea.
Carl doesn't seem to understand the idea of, like, a breakthrough, of, like, things being built. He's like, I never use X, but I use the video recorder every day. But it's like the video recorder could only be invented because of, like, all these other things that happened.
Yeah, he doesn't rate penicillin because he specifically hasn't used it before. But the cat mop, brilliant. Ricky doesn't like it, so he snaps back. Well, if Newton came up with it, you'd be raving about it.
See, this is like his logic flaw again, where he's like, the only reason...
Yeah.
You see creative people do this all the time with ideas, don't you? It's like, oh, if this was a film by Taika Waititi, you guys would love it, but because I made it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, but if it was a film by Taika Waititi, it wouldn't be this film.
Yeah, it'd be better.
It wouldn't. If Newton wouldn't come up with cat mops.
No.
Because it's too genius.
Beyond his time. Can you imagine Newton writing about cat mops? There might have been something like that in the draft.
As well as, yes. Yeah. So in break 10, another actual radio segment when Steve lists quirky patents. So the game becomes Ricky offers an actual meaningful invention and then Carl has to choose between that or the one that Steve lobs up. He has to choose which he would invest in. It's sort of like Dragon's Den or Shark Tank. Here we go.
Right, I've come with you with an X-ray. Meanwhile, Steve walks in with...
Well, firstly, I'm going to offer you, this is patent 5571247. You've got the X-ray machine. I'm going to come to you with the self-containing enclosure for protection from killer bees.
Tell me more.
All right. Well, it's
best punchline of the show, I think. That tell me more.
He's genuinely hooked.
Genuinely impressed. They run out of time after this, and so they can't do the film thing. So they hold on to that until next week, and they end on the winner of Songs of Phrase and get the hell out of there. So that is Series 2, Episode 31. Next week, Series 2, Episode 32, Ricky tells the story of borrowing his brother's jacket at the beach when he was a kid. Carl's dad has retired to Wales and become a very specific kind of thief. And we get some monkey news about a chimp who speaks and is a photographer.
Wow.
Can't wait for that. Get in touch with us. Thanks for supporting us on the Patreon if you are. Zach's on TikTok, Zach Mander, ZACHMANDER. We'll see you next week, Zach.
Bye.
According to the laws of the sea, if he rescues us, Steve, he can claim my boat.